Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In this half hour, let's talk about the library book. It is the latest by Susan Orlean. She wrote, among others, The Orchid Thief. The library book is a really vibrant philosophy book about words and books and the hub that libraries still are. The thread that ties all of these ideas together in this book is the April 1986 fire at the Los Angeles Public Library that consumed or damaged thousands of irreplaceable items and documents and over a million books. Imagine that. And quite possibly the fire was started by an odd, now deceased character named Harry Peak. Orlean sets out to discover the truth in this case and along the way shares many truths of her own. And she tells us about libraries, particularly the Central Library of Los Angeles. She meets really fun, eccentric people along the way. This will be a better movie than Adaptation, which was a movie about the making of a movie based on one of her other books, The Orchid Thief. But the story is meditative, too. Libraries, she says, remind her of her mom. And while the power of the written word is great, she worries that we are all doomed to being forgotten. But, she says, if something you learn or observe or imagine can be set down and saved, and if you can see your life reflected in previous lives and can imagine it reflected in subsequent ones, you can begin to discover order and harmony. You know that you are part of a larger story that has shape and purpose, a tangible, familiar past, and a constantly refreshed future. We are all whispering in a tin can on a string. But we are heard, so we whisper the message into the next tin can and the next string. Writing a book, she says, just like building a library, is an act of sheer defiance. It is a declaration that you believe in the persistence of memory. I don't even need to interview you. That's just too good.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome to the studio. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to Chicago.
Yeah, well, I'm thrilled to be here. If you would warm it up a little bit for me, I'd be even more thrilled.
Yeah, it's going to get worse before it gets better. I got news for you.
Well, I'm ashamed as an Ohioan that I've gone so soft that I find this nearly intolerable.
Because you live in California now.
It got to me, yep.
And in fact, so what's your take, speaking of books burning, what's your take on the fires in California? What are you hearing out there?
I've been following it with a mixture of dread and hope. It sounds like they're starting to contain it, but it's really scary. It's when you're living there, you're really aware of the sense of fire ready to kind of leap out at any moment. And it's very, very scary and really sad to see the number of people who are killed or losing their homes. I'm not sure how we're going to get out of this.
Fire in the case of the library book wasn't that kind of fire. It was probably set inside by an arsonist, and people think it's this Harry Peak guy. How did you discover this story? Why did you decide to tell this one?
It was a pure accident that I even heard about the fire because I knew nothing about it. I wasn't living in LA at the time, but I would have expected that I would have heard about it at some point. This was the largest library fire in American history. So it was a significant event. I only heard about it because I was being given a tour of the library one day, and I had just moved to Los Angeles. The person giving the tour pulled a book off the shelf and took a deep whiff off of the book and said to me, you know, you can still smell the smoke in some of them. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And he said, from the fire, from the big fire. And I said, what fire? And he said, the big fire in 86. It shut the library down for 7 years. The minute I heard that, I knew I was going to write about it and dove in.
The reason a lot of us hadn't heard about it was because it coincided with, in the same news cycle, something else.
Right. When I went and looked at the New York Times to see what was going on that day, the banner headline, and I'm misquoting, but it was something to the effect of Soviets deny meltdown at Chernobyl nuclear reactor. So it was the same day as Chernobyl.
So we had a fire in a library. Meanwhile, the whole planet might have gone up.
Right. I mean, they were competing disasters. And the fact that life as we know it seemed potentially threatened by Chernobyl meant that the story about the library fire did get covered, but it was shoved way back in the newspaper.
What was lost? What was in that library?
Well, it was a big collection. They had over 2 million books, and some of what was lost out of the 400,000 books that were completely destroyed, they had the only patent collection west of the Mississippi. They lost all of the fiction from A through L. They lost all of their science books, all magazines. I mean, it just was an enormous array. They had the biggest collection of books about cooking in the country, and those were all destroyed.
Including 6 guides to cooking with insects. And that includes the classic Butterflies in My Stomach.
You have to find a little humor in the middle of this. And it really was amazing what they lost.
Well, but so I'll just quote you to you again, because that's what this book reminds you of. If you haven't been in a library in a while, what great repositories they still are. 4,000 documentary films, census records back to 1790, theater programs of every play produced in Los Angeles since 1880, telephone directories for every single American city with a population over 10,000. Some of these things obviously could be replaced, in fact, are on shelves elsewhere, but then some of them are clearly not.
Yeah, and certainly some of the more unusual collections, like these phone directories from such a huge number of cities, those probably couldn't be replaced. And, you know, when we think about rare books, we're thinking about valuable Shakespeare folios and the kinds of things that rare book collectors might trade. But when a library has, for instance, yearbooks of every local school dating back to the beginning of the school's founding, that's the kind of thing that is truly irreplaceable. Yeah. They just can't be found and assembled again.
And organized, right. Like somebody's probably got the car manual from their car, but they had every one from cars dating back 100 years.
Exactly.
They had all of the manuals. You could look up Dad's old car and read about it.
And you don't just go to a website and click a button and replace what has really been a collection built over time.
Well, had this stuff been all digitized?
No, this was in 1986. Digitization was still very much in its earliest stages, if even. And so most of that was not recorded in any digital way.
And if it was if it was a recording or a movie, then you can't save that. But you could. Those things are digitized as well. 500 collectible dolls from around the world over this century. Those weren't digitized.
Right.
Those are tangible things that got lost as well.
Yeah. And I mean, the libraries have lots of stuff that isn't text.
That's the thing that I learned in your book, too. And it's not just the collections, it's the activities, the things that libraries do now. I mean, they really are community centers. And I've thought that, I don't know what I thought of libraries, but I thought of a lot of people who are sometimes homeless or don't have the means to find shelter or pay for a book. And so is that a place I want to go? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
We talk about who goes to libraries these days.
Well, I think that there's no question every urban library in this country has a large percentage of people who are homeless who are using libraries. But increasingly, and actually I find this a very wonderful statistic, which is that visits to libraries are going up and people are using them more and more. They're doing all sorts of programming and events and literacy training and business seminars and book clubs. And what libraries are finding is that they really are community centers.
Well, and in the case of Los Angeles, maybe this might be true about Chicago, too. They don't completely divorce themselves of some of those responsibilities to the less fortunate. They have programs for those people. They know that people are going to go there and house themselves for a day. And as long as they don't smell too much, they're going to allow them in.
Yeah, and in fact, a lot of libraries, I was in Madison yesterday, and they were telling me that the Red Cross and different social service agencies have office hours in the library because people have finally said, you know, homeless people gather here. Why don't we do intake? LA does this every month. They do intake for all the social service agencies.
At the library.
And the thought is, well, this is where the people are. Let's bring the services here and get people engaged with services they need.
So how did the library burn down?
Well, that's a question that I spent 6 years digging into and trying to figure out whether Harry Peake, the person who was arrested for it, had actually done it or not. I can't give it away, or I won't give it away. I could give it away, but there are a lot of questions still, and it remains unresolved.
Well, the fruit of that, though, is not fruitless. That was why I was so intrigued by your book. It's as much about libraries, it's as much about the word and the permanence of some of these things as it is about this crime. You intersperse it sometimes chapter by chapter, the telling of that and then the telling of the history of this library and all the bizarre and fascinating and wonderful people you meet along the way.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure. I thought, I can't tell the story of the fire without backing up and telling you the history of the library, which was far more amazing and fascinating than I expected.
But who was Harry Peake? Who was this guy?
Well, Harry Peake was a young guy who grew up in an exurb outside of Los Angeles. Handsome, charming. People liked him very much. He was just one of those people who everybody found delightful. He was dreamed of being a movie star. He moved to L.A. He had no particular reason to believe that he had a future in film, but he wanted very badly to be a movie star. And he pictured his life being very glamorous and dramatic. In the meantime, he was parking cars and doing odd jobs.
And telling stories that may not have been true, like, well, I had a drink with Cher, or I'm friends with Burt Reynolds, and maybe he did bump into Burt Reynolds, but you used the word fabulous.
Yes.
To describe him. What's a fabulous?
Well, he was somebody who made fables. And that's a very gentle way of saying that he was a pretty compulsive liar.
To the point where when they're trying to figure out who did this and they question him, he just started telling stuff. And maybe it was true, maybe it wasn't.
And then that was the problem, is that he was so notorious for lying and always harmless lies, like saying Burt Reynolds called my mother yesterday to wish her a happy birthday. But he began telling people that he had burned the library down, which either was true, but when someone's an inveterate liar, you also think, well, maybe that's not even true. What's true about what he says?
We'll pick it up here in a minute. The book is called The Library Book. It's about libraries. It's about this story. It's about more than that. It's by Susan Orlean. You remember The Orchid Thief. This is The Library Book.
See? Nice guys.
Hi, I'm Coach Pat Fitzgerald.
Sure. Really can.
It's all over.
Finish first.
The Northwestern Wildcats are Big Ten West champions.
Congratulations to the Big Ten West Division champion Northwestern Wildcats.
The Wildcats are going Indy.
But there's still jobs to do. The Cats are in Minnesota to take on the Golden Gophers this Saturday. Andy Mazur has your pregame at 10. Dave Bennett and Ted Albrecht have the kickoff at 11.
Northwestern Wildcat football plays here, 720 WGN.
This story is called The Ugly Truth About Timeshare. If you think you've done your family a favor by buying a timeshare, you need my help. Hello, I'm Chuck McDowell, CEO and founder of Wesley Financial Group. 10 years ago, I started helping folks cancel their timeshare contracts, and in the process started what's now called the timeshare cancellation industry. Timeshare is the only thing that you can buy that you can't tell me how much it's going to cost or when it's going to end. When you buy a timeshare, you give them a blank check to fill out any amount they want for annual maintenance and assessment fees. Sound crazy? The crazy thing is, this never ends. Even when you die, your family's now going to be stuck with this burden. Stop the insanity today. Call my office now. I guarantee if we can't cancel your timeshare contract, you'll pay nothing.
Call for your free information kit, 800-429-3200. That's 800-429-3200, 800-429-3200.
How does a homeowner discover that their insurance policy is outdated? When something breaks and their policy doesn't cover it. 64% of American households are underinsured with outdated coverage. That's what Hippo set out to solve with smart home insurance for the modern home and for up to 25% less. And right now, when you switch to Hippo, they'll give you a smart home starter kit with two smart sensors that help prevent break-ins, water leaks, fires. You'll also get a smart home discount, offering coverage for all the items that run your home, like everything that plugs into a wall, for up to 25% less. It only takes seconds, and all policies are backed by Hippo's top-rated insurance partners with over $200 billion in assets. Go to myhippo.com/WGN and see if you can save up to 25%. Plus, get a smart home starter kit. Go to myhippo.com/WGN today. In 60 seconds, you could save 25%. myhippo.com/WGN.
Are your tires ready for winter? Do you feel like your car is slipping and sliding in the rain or snow? Hurry into Cary Tire and Auto Center, Cary, Illinois, for a free tire evaluation. And while there, save up to $80 on select Hankook winter tires. Now through December 31st. Never halfway. Hankook Tire, where it's always performance season. Stop into Cary Tire and Auto Center in Cary, Illinois, or call 847-639-8866 for all your tire needs.
Now we got to talk on the radio. Fixing the affordable housing crisis in Illinois, could rent control be the solution? Why, some say no way. That's tonight on WGN TV News at 9. What if you could find a way to get forgiveness on the thousands of dollars on your federal student loans and lower your monthly payment in the meantime by half, maybe more? Kaplan Law Firm has spent the last 3 years doing just that for their clients burdened by student loan debt here in the area. Let Kaplan Law Firm help you. Call for a consultation, 312-294-8989. 312-294-8989. Don't waste another dime paying too much for your student loans. Kaplan Law Firm is a debt relief agency helping people file for bankruptcy under the U.S. Bankruptcy Code. Tonight at 6 o'clock at the Harold Washington Library, downtown Chicago, Susan Orlean will be reading from or talking about her book, The Library Book. We're live streaming right now if you're watching us on Instagram. So, hello. Here's a picture of the book. There it is. And you are you reading from the book tonight?
I'm going to read and talk about it.
What's the passage?
A little bit of both.
What's the passage that you favor when you want to give them a taste of the book?
Well, it's a little tricky because the book is about so many different things that whatever I pick feels like I'm leaving something else out. But I read from the beginning a little bit about having recollections of going to the library with my mom.
Yeah.
And how profoundly moving those memories were. And it was a big reason I ended up doing the book, was just thinking, why is going to the library so meaningful? What about it sticks so deeply?
You also confessed that you thought you weren't going to write books anymore because they were just, I don't know if too much work is how you put it, but you alluded to that. And I thought, don't say that.
Well, it makes me feel good to hear that would seem to be a loss. Books are really hard. I was
You worked on this 5 years.
Yeah.
6 years?
Close to six. And I loved it. And at the same time, it's overwhelming.
Well, don't do such a thorough job, for God's sake.
Well, that's, I think, the secret. I've got to do something. And every book I begin by saying, well, this one will be easy.
Easy. Oh,
this
yeah.
is the easy one.
It's about
one.
A library fire, and I live nearby. And,
yeah.
And right out of the gate, you met his, what was it, sister or mom?
Right,
and
right.
So, and she was a coot.
Yeah.
I mean, she was a lot of fun. I have to make a story about her and the couple family members. We'll patch it up, and we're out of here by June.
Yep. This is exactly what I thought. And then suddenly it became this fascinating, complex, multifaceted story that I couldn't resist.
And we learned so much about America as we learn about the evolution of libraries and the characters that ran the one in L.A. Ding, here's a little thing I didn't know until I read your book, that in Atlanta, the library was not open to blacks as recently as 1959.
Yeah.
It was, I presume there was a library for people of color.
Yeah.
But the big library that the white people went to in Atlanta, African Americans could not go to in 1959.
I know. It's absolutely shocking. And there were Atlanta was probably the biggest segregated library that lasted that long. But it's astonishing. And to back up further, the most libraries when they first opened weren't open to women. And also, coincidentally, because we think of libraries as somewhere you go with kids, early on, libraries weren't open to children ever at all. And, you know, kids had to be, they had to be adults to use it.
Fast forward now, there are these multi-purpose internet and also, you know, analog resource centers. And you had a little line in there that kind of got me thinking the other day. You talked about in the Los Angeles Central Library that people there today will be on the internet a lot. I mean, there's computers there. And some of them are looking at pornography and that the librarians allow that as long as it's not illegal pornography.
Right.
Is that true of most libraries?
Yeah, I think the feeling is that if it's legal and not child pornography or something that is prima facie illegal, it's a matter of privacy and freedom of speech that they can look at it. And you can see arguments both ways, but I think librarians' feeling is that they're not censors and they're not going to come and say to you, that's not something good for you to be looking at.
So if you get the New York Times bestseller list, here they are, Sunday's paper yesterday or 2 days ago. There's the top 15, and guess who is at number 12? And moving up to, one of these lists, you have moved up a notch. I know you care. Yeah, last week you were at 13 on the print hardcover bestsellers.
Yeah.
Now you're at number 12. I got to go. Have they optioned this? Is this going to be a movie?
It's going to be a television series.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah, I'm very excited about
it. About the library or about you?
Researching
the book?
We'll figure that out.
Is this Netflix? Who's doing this?
Well, it'll be on Netflix or HBO. We're not sure what the platform is.
Who's going to play you?
I think I should play me at this point. Unless Meryl Streep is still available.
She did a good job.
Yep, I'll check in with her. But I'm really excited about the adaptation.
6 o'clock tonight, Harold Washington Library, the library book, and Susan Orlean. Keep writing. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.